Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in to SST on Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, and on YouTube. Joining me today is Cody O'Connor, talking some hoops. We're going to hit on the Knicks and Zion Williamson's interesting words after playing in Madison Square Garden. Then we're going to run through the NBA and talk about the most trustworthy players across the league, that meaning the players who you look at in fourth quarters of big games, in the playoffs, who you can hang your hat up and say, that guy's going to get the job done. Excited to do it. Excited to talk to Cody O'Connor, as always. Cody, what's up, brother?
What's up, Pete, man? It's NBA full-fledged now, right? I mean, past football, before baseball. We're not the biggest hockey podcast, even though I'm a huge Devils guy. But we're full-fledged. It's NBA time. It's time to get cracking, figure out who's the real contenders. Who could we trust? What better time of the year is it?
And it does feel like one of those years where that inner circle of contenders is a little bit like more gray still. A lot of gray area with certain teams, a lot of waiting to get healthy, which we'll talk about in a minute with the New York Knicks. There's some certain squads who are starting to heat up, and you see that little flame underneath them, and you say, okay, is this a few good weeks after the All-Star break, or is this a team now that's going to enter the playoffs with some gusto? You know, you got the Heat, you got the Warriors, even the Lakers have won 7 out of 10. So this is before they play the Clippers. We don't know what happened yet on Wednesday night. But there's certain teams that now all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, do you want to play them in the playoffs? You know, if you're one of these teams in the West or in the East that's a top four seed, are there some lurkers now who are going to give you fits? I think so, Cody. I think we're going to see some really great intrigue going into the playoffs, which is why I want to have that conversation about which guys, which number ones in the league are the guys who scare people the most.
Well, let me ask you this really quickly, since we did just bring up the NFL. Are we being fooled like we were a little bit with the NFL into thinking that there's more legit contenders than there actually are? Because I think we got a little bit tricked into that idea when it came to football, and we got, you know, a Chiefs Super Bowl, which is not surprising to many people. So are we getting fooled into that with the NBA, or there are maybe 3-4 contenders from each side of the conference?
That's a great question. I think it's in the eye of results, right? And you think that it was a chalky football playoff because the Chiefs won. Oh, the Mahomes, Andy Reid, Chiefs tandem, they won again, a chalky playoffs. But if you look at the turnkey moments in those game, or the sliding doors moments, as people use that term a lot, within each game, you know, things could have went different, right? Like, you do have a Lions team that could have not made 2 or 3 mistakes and been right there. You do have a Zay Flowers fumble entering the end zone, which would have made that game so much more interesting in the conference championship game. So I do think part of it is a little bit results driven. And no matter what we say, unless a left field team in the NBA wins this one, we'll probably say it again, right? Just because the Nuggets or Celtics do win the finals here doesn't mean it wasn't a competitive playoffs, right? Like, even the Lakers Nuggets series last year, a lot of people will reference it as a sweep, but that was the least sweepy sweep I've watched in a long time, right? Like, the Lakers competed for 4 games in that. They happened to lose them all close, and the Nuggets look like they dominated the Lakers. It's not really the case. So I think if a non-Nuggets, Celtics, or Bucks team probably wins the championship, it would look like it was, oh my gosh, it was wide open and a team came from left field. But even if one of those 3 teams win, if there are some great series, if there are some sliding doors and moments, I wouldn't say that we are over-exaggerating the amount of contenders we have right now.
Yeah, not just playing the results, Pete. That's why I love you, because there's got to be context added, and you're so right. Yeah. But that doesn't always get added when you listen in the media. It's just what works for that narrative, and we're not doing that here at Subway Sports Talk.
We don't do that here, man. Come on now. And yeah, of course, like, it looks one way, and if you want to make your point one way, you can find data to do it, right? Like, basically any player in the NBA, you could find any good player in the NBA, you can find a statistic that's going to make them look better, and you can find statistics that'll make them look worse. Like, sometimes it's very difficult to really say A is better than B, right? Sometimes you can find enough to be surefire with it, right? Like, I remember when we posted, Cody, that video of you and I talking about point guards in the Eastern Conference, the biggest pushback on that on TikTok was that Trae Young was getting snubbed in our conversation. And that was a case where counting stats put Trae Young above. But if you go one step further, like, everything else favored Jalen Brunson, right? So I felt comfortable saying that Jalen Brunson was better than Trae Young, but obviously people out there didn't agree with me, right? And they could have said, oh, well, he does this, that, and this more. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter, but the context does matter. And to the people who have brains like you and I, it does matter. And I think it makes sense when you come down to it. So, yeah.
Agree. It does matter.
No doubt. Subway Sports Talk, the context podcast, which really just gets the people going. You know, I tweeted out once, I'm like, this is a really rational, great breakdown. I have a lot of pride in this episode. And I'm like, I know that gets people really excited to listen to podcasts. So thanks for listening. Cause that doesn't help anybody. You know, I actually just did this, you know, now we're going to go on another tangent here. The over on this episode is looking fantastic right now. I just did a little TikTok on Bronny James and this whole thing about ESPN posting him with a solo post as the 39th ranked player in the mock draft from Jonathan Givony. And then all of a sudden now he was taken off of the mock draft saying he's going to probably go back to school next year. And then LeBron tweets something out. And I'm like, you know what? This is the perfect example of people getting what they want out of the media. Some people wanted to go in those comments and be mad online and say, Bronny's not even a Division I basketball player and he's a junior college player. He's not good enough. If he wasn't LeBron James's son, I'm like, yo, do you know that you're the reason these posts happen? ESPN knows what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? And I felt like I was taking crazy pills, Cody, because I know you probably agree with me on this. I want to see Bronny succeed. Do I think that he was ready for the draft? Like, I don't really know. I don't know enough about his career or where he's at right now, but ESPN is going to do it again because it works. It freaking works. So, you know, I don't know. I don't even know how I got there. What brought me here? What are we doing?
It doesn't matter because this is where we are now. And I think I was listening to Russillo and Simmons, which I'm so glad they're back because when they're Sunday night and listen early Monday, it's just, I listen religiously. It's my favorite time of the year. And they were talking about what the ratings show and why they're showing things like First Take and how the controversy is what brings people in. And I think they were talking about it in the context of JJ Redick, who was talking about how he released a video of the X's and O's and how it got this many views compared to like triple the amount when he said something about Doc Rivers and whatnot. And because that's what brings people in. So it is this, you know, the simple-minded, perhaps, fan that kind of wants to see the argument or the controversy. And even though that's, I don't think that's either one of us, you know, I'm sitting here like, why are they showing the Lakers yet again on national television when the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Thunder or even Cleveland, who's been unbelievable, doesn't get any type of recognition nationally? Well, that's because that's what people and what their data has shown them we want to see. And that's what they're going to keep putting out until we, as the viewer, decide to change that. And that's not going to change anytime soon.
No, it's, if anything, it's going in the other direction. Thank you for reeling me back in because I lost myself in that soliloquy I went on before. That's exactly what I was talking about. People say they want breakdown. They say they want the real sports talk, but they don't. They want the goss. They want the tape. That's what they really care about. And there's people. Oh, who was the Bill Simmons guest? Was it Derek Thompson? Who said that he's an NBA fan. He listens to 18 hours of NBA podcast a week. Not 18 hours. I forget what it was.
A lot.
He said, I listen to NBA podcasts the entire season, and I think that my podcast NBA listening to my NBA watching is like 10 hours of podcast a week to maybe an hour of watching basketball a week until the playoffs. And he's like, I think that there are a lot of fans like me. And I think he was right. Like, People care about the chit chat, the trade rumors, the who's going to get through, who's going to actually break through, and who's more trustworthy, rather than looking at the game itself. Like, you and I are actually in the minority for turning on our League Pass app and watching random games, right? Like, we are the weirdos in that regard. And it goes back to another take I have, famous take of mine that pisses some of my friends off. And I hope it, you know, I don't think it'll piss you off, but maybe just a little bit. Like, the whole Cinderella story thing is garbage. In the March Madness, everyone's like, oh, who's going to be the Cinderella story? Nobody cares in reality, right? You get a 16 seed who beats a 1 seed. Oh my God, look at St. Peter's, which college is down the block from my house here. What an amazing story. If they were in the Final Four, people would be like, ugh, this sucks. Where's Virginia? Where's Duke? Where's North Carolina? Like, we're going to watch St. Peter's get smoked finally when their steam runs out. Like, I don't want that. I'd rather see the best teams in the big moments. And I think Cinderella stories are a myth, Cody.
Yeah, I think I disagree a little bit when it comes to college, because I do love seeing the tournament upsets, the 12 seed that's playing in the Sweet 16. And, you know, because of the brackets and all that, it's so much fun. But when it comes to professional sports, I agree 100%. It's the viewership will show you that the Arizona Diamondbacks, for instance, making the World Series last year was bad for baseball and for ratings. It shows you it plain and clear. Now, the Chiefs and the Niners playing in the Super Bowl, of course, with the Mahomes and Taylor Swift effect, skyrocketed those numbers. And yeah, that's what it is. So it's not fun, at least for us, but that's what the large masses are telling us that they want to see.
Yeah. And that's why I think what people say they want versus what they actually consume is often different. And I think that's very interesting. As we now get into the podcast, welcome to the show, Subway Sports Talk. Cody O'Connor and I are about to talk some NBA. We obviously already did a little bit and we're going to continue to do so, but we're going to start off one particular item here that I found just kind of interesting, Cody. And this is a little bit first takey, if you will. And I'm okay with that in this particular moment, because you know, it's this part of the season for the New York Knicks that it's a waiting game. They're injured right now. They're not near full strength. Last night they missed, or 2 nights ago, they were missing 2 All-Stars. They were missing their 3rd best player. They were missing their 4th best player, probably, so let's say 5th best player so far this season in Hartenstein. They're banged up. So what do we want to do? Not going to talk about the Knicks and what they look like without Brunson, without Randle, without OG, without Hartenstein, but we're going to talk about some other stuff in the Knicks ether, and that includes Zion Williamson playing in Madison Square Garden, as he said, for the first time in front of a real crowd. I think his only other time playing in MSG, which is crazy, by the way. He's been in the league for a pretty long time. But we'll crazy. Get to that. His first time playing non-COVID with a packed MSG in MSG, and he really looked excited about it. Cody, in this video, Zion was talking with a great big smile on his face about how playing in the Mecca for basketball was incredible. And the fans, with their loyalty, was amazing. And he was just so excited to do it. First time he's ever really played in a packed MSG. Wow, this is great. And then he stops. I think he catches himself and he goes, smile. And he says, but I'm happy right now, Enola, and I'm happy we got the win. And I'm like, whoa, there was a little something there. Now, it hasn't been a secret that Zion longs for possibly something outside of New Orleans. Hasn't been a secret that he's kind of thrown these little things out about the New York Knicks in the past in his life here. But right now he's a Pelican. Right now the Pelicans are a good team, Cody. And do you think this idea of A, I'm going to give you two parts here, A, that Zion would end up leaving New Orleans and consider joining a New York Knicks team, or B, that the Knicks would even be interested in an injury-laden star such as Zion Williamson? It's a two-part question, and the floor is yours.
All right, I'm going to start by answering neither of them.
Okay.
But the fact that you and I transitioned pretty well into, I think coincidentally, bringing up a first take type of a conversation point, very well done. Now, here's what I think. Zion could leave New Orleans. He has kind of made it seem relatively clear since he's gotten there that, you know, he's there, he's playing now, which is great. But would I be surprised if he left? Not even a little bit. If you're the Knicks, I think a clean bill of health from Zion, if you will, a full season that has shown that, okay, maybe this guy's in better shape and he's taking care of his body. He's taking basketball more seriously, and we can trust that if he is brought over to us and we sign him to a massive extension or give up assets for him, whatever we have to do to get him, that we can trust that he's going to be able to play, you know, 65 games a year. Can he do that? So that's the question. But the point I think that I think of when it comes to this is the fact that it's reasonable now and it's plausible that the Knicks get these superstars, because in years past, before this new regime of the Knicks, before Randall got there, essentially, you'd have these different guys, these superstars, go into New York and talk about the excitement level and how much fun it was and how New York's the Mecca and all the things that Zion said in that video that you've heard other guys say. But the difference was they were never coming to New York then. They were not going to join the Knicks, and even take it back to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving going to join crosstown rival Brooklyn Nets. This new Knicks team, with what they've established, have the merit and I think the opportunity to at least engage and for a fan to think, yeah, we could bring in a superstar. And here's the craziest part, that we might actually be better off without one. Like, how insane that must be for Knicks fans to be able to say that and it be serious and genuine and have some validity to it, that you couldn't say that for years and years and years. So I think that, to me, is kind of what I take away from hearing Zion say that is, hey, it's possible, and we might have to interview him just as much as he's going to interview us.
Wow. It's so true, Cody, and good points by you. I think the same thing kind of happened this offseason with Donovan Mitchell, or not this offseason. Last offseason with Donovan Mitchell, as he was getting floated around from Utah and looking for a trade and et cetera, and Cleveland ended up swiping in and grabbing him. And the Knicks were having this conversation like, okay, is Donovan Mitchell the type of guy you actually want to lead your franchise? Like, the Knicks had reached a point where it's like, okay, we have enough on this roster. We have the pieces. We have the assets. Is this the guy to go all in on? And now Zion, as he's doing his thing, kind of giving a little bit of love to New York and the fans and the MSG and all that stuff, and Knicks fans might have a reasonable feeling of saying, nah, I'm good. Nah, I'm good, right? And like, that's wild enough in and of itself for that to be the case, because for a long time, it was, oh my gosh, Giannis, he could be a Knick, and Kevin Durant's going to come here.
And it was a
back
joke
in the day, LeBron. And it was like, this is never going to happen. Why are we doing this? This is first takey. That's why our conversation right now, even though it has a little bit of first take in it, it isn't necessarily full force on first take, because it's a pretty real conversation. And the Knicks would have to be reworking a lot of stuff if they were going to end up with Zion Williamson on their roster, because does he fit with some of the other pieces? Is him and Brunson the right type of tandem, right? Like, these are things that you want to actually consider. And the answer is, he might not be a good bet, right? Like, you almost would want him at a discount. And is that going to happen? If you look at his basketball reference, I mean, he missed an entire season in 21-22 because of the foot. And he played 29 games, which he made an all-star. Was that that wasn't the COVID year. No, 29 games last season, made an all-star team, and then missed the entire season, rest of the season, leaving the Pelicans to go from first place all the way down. And now this year, he's at 48 games. He just played his seventh game in a row, which I believe if he plays one, or no, sorry, last night against the Knicks was his sixth game in a row, and one more would tie his career consecutive game streak, which is insane, Cody. The seventh.
The Celtics are currently on a longer winning streak than Zion's played consecutive game streak. That just sounds funny to me.
It sounds very funny. And like, that's the real question. So that's why I wanted to bring this up. It's like, as a player right now, Cody, what does Zion Williamson mean to you? As just a player in the NBA on a good playoff team in the Western Conference, do you see him with the same attitude we saw him when he was cooking early on in his career and at parts of last year?
My lens on him has definitely changed, and I'll be completely honest. I could be just bitter because of the futures I had on the Pels and them free-falling the way they did last year. It still stings to this day, because it's like a similar roster, and you're seeing what I think, not only what we saw last year, what we thought the potential was for that team last year, you're seeing a lot of that this year. you know, Zion, when he's got it going, still looks unstoppable. He still, to me, looks at times like that unstoppable force of not only getting to the rim and finishing, but like missing and then either snatching his own rebound or those times where he literally just takes it from a defender. Like, no, that's my ball. Like, I'm a 16-year-old playing with 8-year-olds right now. Like, he has some of that, but I don't know that I trust that it's going to be with the consistency, especially with what you're assuming you're, you know, signing or giving up for him and whatnot. So if we've ranked players, which we're not doing, thankfully, right now, I don't know where I'd have him just yet. Like, it's tough. You say top 20, but then you go through 20 and you get around there and you're like, oh, crap, I haven't mentioned 3, 4, 5 different guys that I might like a little more than him. So, I mean, he's probably in the top. I'd say pretty convincingly he's in the top 30 just off the top of my head. But that list, it goes quick. And so what are you paying for this top 30-ish guy for a health bet and whatnot? So I don't know really what to think of Zion. It makes the Pelicans as a whole a little confusing. And that's why ultimately I don't really bet on or against them very often. I don't see myself making futures with them because they're a little bit of a tough team to figure out right now for me.
Right now, his contract, because he did sign an extension in 2022, which we didn't find out right away, but there are a bunch of stipulations in that contract about, you know, playing enough games and minutes and et cetera, that is going to make certain types of money kick in and not kick in. But right now, just the basis of it, he signed through 2027-28. So that means four more seasons after this season at $36, $39, $42, and $44 million, which is a lot of freaking money. Now he's 23 years old. Is there a world where he gets right and is starting to play 65 to 72 games on a general regular basis? I think it's possible. You know, I think if you asked us, and now it's a bad time to say because Joel Embiid is injured at the moment, but if you asked us at the beginning parts of Joel Embiid's career, if he was going to be playing enough to win an MVP and to make playoff pushes, we probably would have been pretty skeptical. But at this point in Joel's career, he's played over 60 games 4 times, and he won't get there again this year. But, you know, I think it's possible to see Zion be a relatively healthy NBA player. But is that a bet you want to take as a team like New York, who has assets, has a bright future, has the pieces to make moves other than just that? And plus, this is going to be have to be a move. He's not going to be a free agent for a long time, right? So this question is very much double-sided in the idea of like, oh my gosh, does this guy want to play in New York? That's amazing. And also, does this team want him in New York? That's interesting.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if he's a better fit for a lesser team currently, like a team that maybe has some pieces but aren't fully there, like in Indiana. Maybe like one piece of Zion could make him like, wow, if Zion's that guy, he can really put you over the top. But the Knicks are already in a spot where they're legitimately contending, or we assume they will be when they're healthy this year. And so it's just such a big risk, again, the assets and the pieces that you're moving around to give up for him. It's a big risk, and I think if you're the Knicks, you're probably saying, no, we're okay. Like you said before, I think you're saying we're good. Maybe somebody else takes the chance on him, or he just sticks with New Orleans. They're young. He's signed there. Maybe they have a chance to make some noise.
And that's a great question and a great segue, because we're going to start talking about some of that stuff. But before we get into it fully, let me just ask you that. I know you said you don't have great pleasure in betting on the Pelicans, and you don't like to kind of pick a side on them on a given night. I know I picked them as my wild card team to be a contender in the playoffs. And I believe you said, who did you say? You didn't
Dallas, I believe.
Yeah, you might have said Dallas
or Miami. I know when we did two podcasts not like too far apart, and we did a draft, and anyway, I think it was Dallas. Let's go with them.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with Dallas. And but now, with that being said, is this Pelicans team someone who you do want to take a little bit serious, who you do see making some noise in this playoffs from a matchup perspective, from a potential perspective?
I guess there's a couple ways to look at it. Like, one, I can see why you or anybody would be interested in them. Like, you think of Minnesota and Oklahoma City, who are sharing a lead at the top, and they're two teams who are versatile. They're athletic. They are lengthy. They can switch everything. They have a lot of just strong, fast type of guys that are going to run the floor and kind of athleticism you at times. And the Pelicans have a lot of that. Again, it's what, you know, I thought was going to make them scary last year. But if I looked at it and I say, here's the Western Conference, as a Thunder fan, the Pelicans are probably a team that I'd be pretty comfortable playing in the first round. Again, the options are someone like Dallas, Golden State, the Lakers, Suns. You know, the Pelicans and the Kings are probably the two that stand out the most that I'd say I'd probably prefer to play those teams. And then maybe it's the Lakers, then maybe the Warriors. But, you know, when you're talking about those other three teams with Luka, you know, with Steph Curry, of course, and with LeBron and AD, like, it gets scary. So the Pelicans are probably a team that I think are on the lesser side of the Western Conference. I'd probably be more surprised if they won the first round.
And as it stands currently right now, they would be facing off against the Clippers in the first round as the five seed. But obviously, they're a half game ahead of the Suns right now, one game in front of Sacramento, one and a half in front of Dallas, and then there's a little bit more space between Golden State and the Lakers. So, yeah, and they're one of those teams that's like, oh, my gosh, if Trey Murphy is hitting shots and Herb Jones is giving your best player fits and CJ's playing decent ball and Ingram's playing and Valanciunas is too big for your bet, you're big. It's like, oh, my God, it might suck to play them. And yet still, you'd probably rank them behind some of the other teams in that vicinity, which is just talking to the depth of the Western Conference right now. All right, Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy and Cody O'Connor. Let's move on to our other side of the podcast here. And we could use Zion and the Pelicans as a test case here because we just talked about trust. We talked about if we trust them to be contenders in the playoffs and if we can trust Zion Williamson to be the best player on a team. Now, Cody, we spend so much time during the NBA season talking about stars, talking about the MVP race, talking about what it's going to take in the playoffs to get over that hump, to get to the finals, to win a finals. And when we get down to it in the NFL, and in the NBA, probably more so than any other league that we cover here, which is really the main two leagues we cover here. But in America in general, we end up talking about rings, right? And we talk about the people who have gotten it done on the biggest stage and walked away holding up the trophy. We do it all the time. That's when we're a results-driven community and sports-watching fan base that we care about the rings. So to that, I heard Richard Jefferson talking on Sam Morril and Mark Norman's podcast talking about this exact idea. And based upon this idea where rings are the most important thing and championships are what it's all about, and that's how we judge these players nowadays, that his thing is if that's true, that's how we judge players. Currently, right now in the NBA, there are only six true 1As in the NBA. And his point behind that was to be a 1A, legitimately claiming a 1A spot, you need to have been a best player on a championship team. So that would include Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic, and Kawhi Leonard. That's it. Those are the only six players in the NBA who have been the best player on a championship team. Six players, Cody. And there's many other players who we talk about as top five players in the NBA, but they haven't gotten over that hump yet. So right now I want to talk about trust, big trust. And I want to see which players that you and I can look at and say, maybe they've gotten it done in the past. Maybe they haven't yet, but we can see them getting it done. Now, before we get into specific players, how do you feel about this entire setting and how we're going to talk about this topic here?
Well, obviously I don't, and Richard Jefferson, for what you're saying, and from what I understand from the context, is he's saying not that this is his opinion, but this is how the media views it. And right. And I think that when we're talking about it, we're talking about it in the same breath. So for me, like, I think it's silly that that's what we do because, if, you know, of the players you named, two of them are bona fide top six. I guess three of them, Steph Curry is probably still in there, but are bona fide top six. Like Kawhi is not a bona fide top six right now, neither is LeBron James. And Kevin Durant's probably right on the cusp of it, but you could argue that he's not the best player on his team right now, and that's not a slight to Kevin Durant.
Right.
But there are certainly more players that you trust. There's more context that goes into this. Like, you've definitely heard me talk about Embiid and the Sixers and their disappointment. And I'm not judging them just based on the fact that they don't have a ring. I'm judging them on the fact that they can't make it out of the second round. And oftentimes they're the favorite. Like those, that context matters a lot in this conversation. And what you did in that series, were you yourself? Were you lesser than what you've performed at in the regular season? Or did you elevate your play? And I think that's going to have a lot to do with the level of trust when it comes to the playoffs and the guys that we're going to list in this conversation.
Yeah, and this is our second first takey topic of the day here. And maybe that just goes to show where we are in the NBA season right now, especially with the Knicks.
We're just leaning into the media.
Especially with the Knicks not having like specifics to talk about right now, right? You can't break down the Knicks because we haven't seen Randall and OG and Mitch and Hartenstein and Brunson's out right now. So like, what are we going to do here? We could obviously deep dive into any one particular team, but I think there's a more interesting way to do it. And I greatly fall into the bucket of, no one player wins a championship alone, right? So like, we're going to talk about Nikola Jokic, who is one of my, let's just say it, he's my favorite player in the league right now.
1A.
Is it fair to Jamal Murray to only give Jokic the credit as being the 1A? As when Jamal Murray was hurt, they were struggling through the playoffs and still doing better than probably, you know, most teams would do in that situation, missing their second best player. And that may speak to Jokic's impressiveness, but they don't win that championship without Jamal Murray last year. They don't win that championship without Bruce Brown and Christian Brown and without Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. Like those guys really meant something. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like what? You can't win without those others, but we always boil it down to the one. To the one guy who didn't get it done. But to your point, Cody, which was a great one, is the context matters, right? Like if James Harden lost to the best team of our generation in the Golden State Warriors in 7 games, which he did, but didn't miss 42 threes in the last game, would we have a different conversation? I don't think that we would, Cody. I think maybe the hate on a Harden gets a little bit harsher because of his performance, but he didn't come up and win the championship yet as the best player. And now, until the rest of his career, he is a career playoff loser, even though he went further against the best team than anybody else not named LeBron James, right? So that's where the context of what you're talking about is really important. So why don't we get into it and start talking about some of the teams. And let's talk quickly about that top six. What I'll say is right now, Nikola Jokic, we don't even need to say anything. Is that fair?
Yeah, he's the best player in the league, and leave it at that. The guy I trust the most.
Is he the most trusted player in the league right
Unquestionably,
now?
Unquestionably, in my eyes.
Unquestionably. Okay. Who would be the, and I know we said we weren't going to list this in order here, but who would be the next most trusted star for you in the NBA?
This is tough. But who I really believe is, well, you know what? Screw it. I don't care if this is homerish. Right now, what we've seen all year long is a model of consistency from SGA, who's currently second in the MVP odds. He leads the league in 30-plus point games. There is a running joke going on Twitter right now that my buddy and I have sent back and forth since the All-Star game, because his stat line was like 31-8-6, and someone was like, this is literally his stat line every game. And it couldn't be any more true. He doesn't take typically any more than about 20 shots a night. He's incredibly efficient. He gets his guys involved. He feels like he has a game that is matchup proof. He's under control at all times, and he doesn't force the issue. And so there's another guy that's sitting right there that I was so close to taking, and I'm going to leave him for you. But based on what we're seeing this season, if that's somewhat at least how we're doing this, and granted, SGA hasn't had the opportunity really to show in the playoffs. He had the bubble series with Oklahoma City against the Rockets that went 7 games, and he had some moments, he had some duds. Like that was a very different Shai Gilgeous and a very, very different Oklahoma City team that was led by Chris Paul. So I think you can kind of throw that out. But what I'm seeing from him this year and dating to last year too, if he's anything but that guy, I'd be surprised, because like I said, it's felt matchup proof, it's nightly, it's consistent, and it's been done in a very similar way, and it doesn't feel like someone's just going to solve it. I just think that's just who he is.
So would you say then that if the Thunder come up short from an NBA championship this year, you don't believe it would be because SGA went down a level. It would be because the rest of the team's not ready.
I'd be more surprised to find out that SGA was, you know, averaging 25 or 26 a game, but also shooting closer to 40% as opposed to the 55% that he's at right now.
I think I would agree with that. And in the Richard Jefferson thing, and I don't want to keep putting him on this because it wasn't like that was his whole thing. It's just how he's saying the media handles it, and that's how he was looking at it in that moment. But in that idea, like, SGA could be a 1A in your eyes without winning a championship. And that's how, you know, that's how most people look at it, honestly, right? But he can live above the Embiids and the Hardens, who get crapped on for making the playoffs and putting up numbers just way less efficiently than they normally do.
Yeah, but that's the point, though, right? Like, to me, that's the point. If you went into the playoffs and were clearly not the same guy or played much lesser to the expectation that we've seen all season, that's when, yeah, you deserve criticism in my eyes. You know, that's where I'm looking at, not just the totality of the series or not just the result. You know, if you lose 4-3, but you were playing above your head, I'm not going to sit here and criticize you and say, man, he just wasn't ready for the moment. I know that's what we're talking about, the media does, but that's ridiculous. If you're watching the game, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And now I'm going to bring up Giannis Antetokounmpo and say, I think you have to just throw him in that conversation as the most trusted guys in the league, despite the most recent playoff experience was him getting injured. And then when he got back from injury, it was too little too late. So lost in the first round to the Miami Heat last year, but the year before that, they were NBA champs. Is Giannis still deserve all that leash there as a top dog in the NBA?
Oh, yeah. And he's been awesome again this year. And, you know, he deserves the leash because not only did they win a title, they won a title in a game six where he had 51 points and was, what, perfect from – not perfect from the free throw line, but was maybe, what, very 17 good, yeah. for 19, something like that, which, you know, that's always been his bugaboo. So – he deserves that leash, and it's going to start running out, though, if they fall flat on their face or they completely underwhelm in the playoffs this year. Then I think you're going to start to hear the murmurs again. But he's earned probably one more year.
All right, and then Steph Curry.
Of course.
What do you – right? You chalk him up there, right? He deserves it.
Well, he's obviously a four-time champion, a finals MVP, and – just someone that I know is going to be ready for that moment and is going to elevate his game. And in that same breath, I think I'm ready to go there with Jimmy Butler as well. I just think he's just, he's shown it for too many years in a row to do anything but give credit where credit's due.
And he's such an interesting one, Jimmy Butler, because he almost never is talked about as a top five guy. He's not even often talked about as a top 10 guy. But day in or season in, season out, playoff in, playoff out, like, he just shows up and it's just different, right? And I did this on our podcast we did last week, Cody. They don't win without Duncan Robinson and Gabe Vincent and Caleb Martin all shooting over 40% from three last year, right? They don't make it to the finals without that. But yet we still just say, oh, Jimmy and Heat culture got him to a finals. And I think he deserves it, though. And I really just think he deserves it. Right.
Every group, though, you said it before with the Nuggets, like, as great as we talk about with Jokic, it takes the others. It's just, it's the way it goes. You need other guys to knock down shots. You need the non-Jokic minutes in that case to be able to at least sustain or to not get completely blown out. So it's always going to take that. It'll never be just one guy, which is why, again, like you said, it's kind of a silly conversation.
Yeah, it is. It is. But yet it's still valid in some sense where some people will never look at a team as able to win a championship because of the guy at the top. So let's go through those other six real quick. Kevin Durant, do you still want to throw him up there and just say, yep, he deserves it, he's trustworthy?
To me, he's trustworthy. I mean, again, they got bounced by Denver, but the two games they won, look what him and Booker did and had to do. So I not only Kevin Durant, at this point, I put Booker right alongside him.
Yeah. I would agree. I mean, and that's why I felt comfortable betting against them last year, is because it took them to be their absolute best selves to even be in games with Denver. And you saw that play out over the series. Kawhi Leonard, how are we feeling on the trust factor for Kawhi Leonard right now?
As long as he's healthy and looks this way, I I've regained my trust for Kawhi because I just think he's nails. I just think that's who he is, and as long as his body, you know, agrees with him and then thus with me, I keep Kawhi right up there.
And I think LeBron, I would agree with that on Kawhi Leonard, by the way. That's one of the main reasons why I think the Clippers have a chance. For all the crap you give Paul George and James Harden, you never give that crap to Kawhi Leonard because of what he does and his resume and what he stands on when he's healthy in the playoffs. LeBron's kind of in his own category right now, right? You trust him, but you just don't know how much he has in a tank in a given game. So I guess he's kind of in his own category, so we won't break that down. Now it gets a little bit more interesting.
I think
here.
There's one. Well, you know, go ahead. I wonder if maybe you did this on purpose. So go ahead.
Okay. So now it gets a little bit more interesting to me. And I think that brings us to, I was going to name a few people. Do you want me to name the one who I think you're going to talk
Please.
About?
Please.
Well, I was going to name amongst the few was going to be Jason Tatum.
Okay. So I do think that there's one that maybe we just missed. It's Luka.
I was saving
okay,
him.
Okay,
yes.
So you did see. Okay, so please go ahead. Floor is yours.
So I was going to bring him up in this category as well. So now we have these players who are in the conversation during the regular season every year as top five players, because you know we have 12 top five players in the NBA, and they have varying levels of playoff success where they may have amazing numbers, but their team has come up short. They may have made it to championships, but they haven't won it yet. Which Jimmy Butler could probably fall in that category as well. But that would bring me to Jason Tatum, Luka Doncic. I would have thrown Devin Booker in that category, but we already kind of spoke about him.
Yeah, but I agree with you. With you putting it this way, I thought Booker deserved to be there as well.
Yeah, and then Donovan Mitchell is the other guy who I put in this category. Now, I would say that Tatum and Luka do live a little bit of a tier ahead of Donovan Mitchell, but if you look at the playoff numbers, Mitchell has put out some incredible playoff performances, all for naught in the sense that his teams have come up short. But Tatum, Luka, and Donovan Mitchell have the numbers to back up their playoff trust, but there's just that something out there. For Tatum, it may be the killer instinct of getting to the line consistently and attacking the hoop. For Luka, it may be being a little bit too Luka-centric of an offense. For Mitchell, it may be just a little too small to impact the game at all moments, right? But all those three guys, the numbers, you can't really argue with, but there's that little something that all of us see and we go, they're just not quite on that other tier yet.
Yeah, I really like that little quick breakdown of each one too. That was spot on. With me for Tatum, and it's, again, it might be partial frustration from gambling on him, but he's just inconsistent to me. I can't trust that night in and night out that Tatum's giving me 28 to 32 with good decision making and high efficiency or close enough to 50% field goal percentage. With Mitchell, it's like sometimes you watch and you're like, damn, I kind of feel for that guy. Like, what else can he do right now? Like, some of those Jazz moments, specifically, I'm thinking of that series with Denver a few years back where it's like, dude, what else can this man do? And then Luka to me is the upper echelon of that tier, but I love how you put that. Like, is it maybe just too much Luka dribbling the air out of the ball? And does that throw the other guys out of rhythm or not allow them the chance to get into one? So it's all good points. And I want to ask you this. Does Jalen Brunson deserve to be mentioned in that category? Did you feel like you waited because you didn't want to be Knicks bias or because he just hasn't done it consistently or enough just yet to put him there?
He has one playoff as a one, right?
And a series.
He had two games.
Well, he had that series with Dallas with Luka being hurt.
And half a series, right? Because Luka played
half those
games.
I think he started the first. Would he get hurt in the second game, maybe it was?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, yeah, one playoff in one series as the number one guy on a team. And, yes, so far so good for Jalen Brunson, but I don't think he's on the level of Luka, Tatum, and Donovan from a playoff perspective. Listen to this, Cody. 2021, Utah won the first two against the Clippers and then lost four in a row. Here are the point totals for Donovan Mitchell in that series. 45, 37, 30, 37, 21 was the big stinker, and then 39 in a closeout game where they did lose by 12, but... Dude, my guy averaged like 35 points a game in this series here, right? Like he averaged over well over 30 points in that series. That doesn't even include the 7-game battle against the Nuggets in the bubble season where he went 57, 30, 20, 51, 30, 44, 22 in a game they lost by two, where he kind of had more of a bad game, 9 for 22 for 22 points. But like Brunson doesn't have that resume just yet of putting up buckets in the biggest moments for years on years.
Yeah, and this is where it gets dicey, where it's like, am I, and I probably have already kind of screwed this up, especially with like the second guy I named being SGA, but am I projecting forward or am I going based on a little bit of resume to go with it? Like there's kind of two sides of that coin. And you know what the thing with Donovan Mitchell is, it doesn't ever feel like those empty stats, or it doesn't feel like box score numbers. Like the eye test and watching the game adds up to what you've seen in the box score. And it doesn't feel like he's just chucking. It's like he's the best player on the floor for that team. And he's big time, right? Too. He's clutch. He always has been in my eyes.
It only feels like chucking when you're not making the shots, right? Like when he goes 9 for 22 and the team loses game 7, it's like, damn, man, Mitchell was really, he was really hoping for some of those to go in. But that's not fair to him because it's who he's been. And you see the other stuff that he's done in these games where they've won or they've been really close and he's put up great numbers. And yeah, it is supposed to be a gut check though, right? Cody, like I think you're on point with bringing up SGA because based upon where we are at this moment right now, there aren't more trustworthy players in the league outside of Jokic and Giannis than SGA. They just don't exist. Quickly on Tatum though, before we go to some other players here, do you think it's his makeup? I heard Bill Simmons talking about this the other day, that he's just not that assassin type threat offensively that some people want him to be, and it's just not who he is. Or do you think it just hasn't fully clicked yet because we forget that my man's 25 years old?
Yeah, the fact that he's 25 still blows my mind, especially with all that it's they've crazy. Accomplished. And that's like the part that's almost like unfair. It's you know, he's been to the NBA Finals, he's gone to the Conference Finals time and time again, and it's not easy to win those playoff series. It can be grinds, but for me, it's his inconsistency, and I don't know if that's his makeup. But I don't think that it's that he's not necessarily like the cold-blooded killer, you know, because again, I'll go right back to SGA, but I don't see this cold-blooded killer in SGA. There's a reason you're not seeing 40 to 45 put outputs from him. It's because he's measured and he's consistent, but he's able to do it efficiently. And there's too many times where I've seen Tatum's stat line look at like 5 for 19 for 18 points and his team, you know, never really had much of a chance in it. And you know, Luka's going to be the one that's going to put up the huge numbers. So I don't know where I'm going with that. The point is, for me, Tatum is just, it's got to be a little bit more consistent. But the one thing I'll say for him is when he's not shooting well, he is still impacting the game. He's still a great defender. He's a really good rebounder, and he's a much better and much more improved facilitator than I think he was earlier on in his career. So it's not like he's not affecting the game, but I just want to see it a little bit more consistently.
It makes you think, if from a reputation standpoint, would it have benefited him to not have been so successful so much already? Like, it's such a dumb thing to say out loud. But it's true, right? Like, if he hasn't already made two finals and lost, or one finals or two finals?
I think he
two,
made right? one. I think one finals.
Just one. And just then one conference finals. Every conference finals.
Yeah.
Like, if they got bounced in a much less dramatic fashion in the second round once or twice in his career, would we be putting the ceiling on him? Like, oh, he can't get over the hump. He needs all this extra help. Not that he gets as much as some other guys because he is still so young, but it almost feels like because of his success, he's just getting graded on a different scale, which is difficult.
Yeah, not to open up a can of worms, and I did hear you talking about this, you know, maybe a month or so ago, but it's the same thing of like holding LeBron's finals record against him just because he went to 10 straight NBA finals. Like, that's the silliest thing, that if he had lost in the conference final, that would have been better for his career somehow. Like, that's the same type of conversation, I feel like.
Right. Like, if he was 4 for 4 instead of 4 for 10, like, that's better. No, it's worse. He didn't make it as far as much. Yep. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. I stand true to that all the time. I always bring that up. All right. Next tier, or I don't know if I want to say tier, cause I'm kind of asking you, but next group of players here that are interesting to me in this regard. I'm now going to throw Jalen Brunson in there. I'm also going to throw in Anthony Edwards. And then I want to throw in a twofer here because I'm not necessarily sure who is the 1A on this team. Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox.
Ooh, that's a great question. I think I would lean De'Aaron Fox because he's more of the closer. And then my next question for you then is Joel Embiid on this list in this tier, or is this another purposeful leave off for you?
Not purposeful, honestly. Forgot about him because he's not playing right now.
Fair.
So hand up.
Yep.
Hand up. Though, now that you say it, I think he's one of his own tiers. I think he's him and old James Harden right now are in the same tier, right? Like, some people would want to put Luka in that tier. I definitely would not. I think Luka's playoff performances have been nothing short of incredible when he's out there. And he is on track to make a big leap at some point, and his team is getting better. But Joel Embiid, like Julius Randle, who's a lesser version of Joel Embiid right now, there are specific statistics that show he has been worse in the playoffs, and it's not by a little bit, right, Cody? So I do think if I was going to make this tier, even though he's had more playoff success than, say, a De'Aaron Fox, I don't know if I trust him as much as I would trust a De'Aaron Fox, which feels a little blasphemous to say out loud, but I kind of feel that way.
It's what he's shown. It's what he's proven. And I think when the game gets tighter and the calls are not quite as consistent and you see him in the fourth quarter sometimes maybe a little bit gassed, unfortunately, until you prove otherwise, that's who you are. And again, like, I don't want it to make it seem like I don't like Joel Embiid as a basketball player. I think he's unbelievable. He's a freak of nature. But it's not just, oh, he hasn't won a ring, so this is going to put him in that category. It's who were you up against? Like, that Atlanta series has to be held against him really, really in a big way, because they were such a great path and a great chance for them. And they were such big favorites in that series. And there's been multiple times where they just haven't shown up as favorites, or at least as like a puncher's chance or a close to maybe an even type of spread. And they haven't shown up. So until they do, until he does, until he elevates in the playoffs, this is who he is.
And just to go back through it, because I did it with Donovan Mitchell, and I'm going to do a gut check thing with you here in a second. You look at some of Joel Embiid's box scores from the playoffs, that Atlanta series, first two games, 39 and 40, just killing folks. Then in a win, 27 points, but they won big, so it's not like, you know, he probably didn't need to do more. He only took 14 shots. After that, 4 of 20 for 17 points. Only got to the free throw line 8 times, which is a small number for him. Then in a loss, 37 on 12 of 20 shooting. That's really good, right? And then he went 9 of 24 in a win with 22 points, which means he got some help along the way right there. And then in the closeout game, 31 points, 8 turnovers on 11 of 21 shooting. So yeah, there are some marks on that resume there in that series alone. And then against Miami the year after that in 2022, you know, he missed two games in the playoffs, which you don't know if you want to ding him for, but that's kind of part of his resume right now too, not being available when he comes back from injury, probably playing through injury. 18 points, 24 points, 17 points, 20 points. It's like, man, which Joel Embiid did we just get here against Miami in a playoff series? Did he get small point outputs because of his injury, or because he wasn't doing what he normally does in the regular season, because he was only getting to the free throw line less than 8 times per game, which is not him in the regular season? You know, like, those questions start to become real. And again, even in a closeout game against Boston last year, 5 of 18, 15 points, 4 turnovers, 3 games in a row down the stretch against Boston in the 7-game series last year. You know, those things do add up, Cody. You can't not look at them.
100%. At some point, that's who you are until you prove otherwise.
All right, so gut check on Joel Embiid, because I think it's interesting here. I'm going to run through it. Tatum or Embiid playoffs?
Tatum.
Mitchell, Embiid.
Oof. Like, this is where it's tough, right? Because Embiid's the better player. Who do I trust to elevate in that moment? I trust Donovan Mitchell will elevate in that moment more than Embiid. I might have taken Giannis, an easy way out, but Giannis, yes.
Jalen Brunson.
Again, same thing as the Donovan Mitchell answer, verbatim.
Embiid is a better player but right now you don't trust him to elevate as much as you would trust Brunson to elevate.
Yep.
Fair? Fair. Okay. Jimmy Butler or Embiid?
Probably the same. Like, group those three together. And, you know, the thing with Jimmy is we've really seen it, too. Like, that's the other thing. We've really seen it, and it's matriculated to wins and in series that they were not the favorite and not even close to it. If you think of just the series last year against Boston, I think they were 4-1 going into the series, something like that. I remember because I took it. And then they went up 3-0, and then it was 3-3. And I was like, holy shit, really? They're going to lose? This is awful.
That's crazy, right? All right, and then into the Western – well – I don't think we can say Paolo or Tyrese Halliburton, obviously, or Trae Young. We're not doing that, right? Time will tell. Okay, Anthony Edwards or Joel Embiid?
Joel, because we haven't seen it with Anthony, but like, I would not be surprised to see that he takes his game to a whole nother level in the playoffs. He feels to me like that type of guy, and I think that's what it'll take for Minnesota to make serious noise and to be able to win round after round.
I would probably lean Anthony Edwards right there, to be honest.
Fair.
I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it sure as hell felt like he was ready for that stage last year in the playoffs. So we'll see, I guess, this year as a favorite entering the playoffs if he's going to feel that way again. SGA, I think you already kind of showed your hand there. SGA, right?
Thunder up.
All right. Jokic, Kawhi. Yep. Anyone on the Pelicans, Ingram or Zion?
No, I have to take Embiid, right? Over them. I have to take Embiid over either Kings guy to this point.
Booker or Durant?
No, I take Booker and Durant over Joel Embiid, right? I mean, I don't think that's crazy to say.
And then Luka, Steph, LeBron / Anthony Davis?
I don't have trust for Anthony Davis, so I would say Embiid.
Okay.
Because that's my own, at least my personal opinion, but I just do not trust Anthony Davis. He just too often looks like uninterested. I mean, I watched them the other night in the first half. He literally was just like kind of running around and just doing his thing. And then the second half, he's like, all right, I'm going to lock in now. And it was a little like too little too late. It's like, dude,
right?
You're the best player on this team. Like, does somebody have to tell you that every night? He pisses me off.
Yeah. Someone does need to tell him, I think, every night. And Anthony Edwards, for the record here, 2 playoff series in his resume here. 36, 20 on not great shooting, 19 on not great shooting, then 24 on 50%, 22 on not great shooting, 30 on not great shooting. So that was his first ever series. That was in 2022 against Memphis when they were a top seed. And then last year against Denver, where Minnesota really played pretty damn well in a lot of those games. They got smoked in game one. He only scored 18 on bad shooting, and he scored 41 in a tight game on great shooting, 36, 34, and 29. And yeah, they lost in 5, but boy, he put up some pretty good numbers in that series, man.
Yeah, he feels like, like I said, the type of guy that is going to elevate.
Yeah. Anyone else jump out here that we missed, Cody? I don't think I miss anyone of importance. I think like Tyrese hasn't played in the playoffs yet, Halliburton, that is. But do you trust him? Do you feel like you trust Halliburton?
It's like his style feels somewhat untrustworthy. Like, I really am curious to see what that looks like, how that run and gun pace, no pun intended for the Pacers, but how that translates in the playoffs. I don't have a great feel on that. I would just be, you know, BSing my way through that answer.
Do you have a gut on Paolo Banchero in the playoffs?
What I think he'll be? I think he's going to be just fine. I don't think you're going to see like 30 to 35 a night, but I think he's going to play, you know, to the back of the baseball card, as you guys like to say. I think you're going to see that.
There you go. Yeah. So I think in conclusion here is there's a lot of good players in this freaking league, man. And most of them won't get over the hump, Cody. Like, end of the day, we're talking about 2 or 3 players who increase their reputation after a playoffs is done. Is there any one player off the top here who stands out to you that you think may have a coming out party in this playoff? And I'm taking SJ off the table.
I wonder, like, would this be Ant's coming out party? I don't know if it, I guess, you know, maybe nationally a little bit more if they, you know, make second round, third round.
Winning some series, yeah.
Again, I don't know that it's Brunson's, but if the Knicks are able to, like, whoever's going to win is going to. But here's what I want to ask you, or what I want to point out, because we talked about how one player is never going to win it all, or never going to be the one to do it themselves. Who do we think could be the second or even third guy that elevates and is, you know, can get his team over the hump? Because ultimately, after all that conversation, what it will come down to is those others, or the, you know, the 1A, 1B to the superstar. Like, who's that going to be? Because last year it was obviously Jamal Murray.
That's a probably an even better question, and maybe we should do that later in the season about the number twos. That would actually be probably a more fun and more interesting conversation about that other guy who's like, oh my God, so-and-so went for 36 the other night. Like, that's incredible. I think your guy, Jalen Williams, agreed, is a great candidate for that this year. Like, just say in the playoffs and you're facing off, let's say the Pelicans, right? And Herb Jones is just making SGA's life incredibly difficult. Can you see Jalen Williams go out there and drop some 30 burgers? Can you see Chet Holmgren go out there and put up some stupid numbers? I think those are both possible possible options there.
Oh, I agree.
Wow. That's a good question here, Cody. You almost stumped me right now because I'm looking at the teams.
It's a weird question. But it's funny, like, we start with that whole first take type conversation, right? Like, this is what people want to hear. And then we're like, let's also do a podcast about the second and third best players on each playoff team. Like, that'll really generate some buzz. But it'd be fun.
You know what? You know who I do think could do it? And it's going to kill me to say it. I think if Porzingis is healthy, he can do some dirty stuff.
That's a great one.
I think he can do some dirty stuff. And he would need a coming out party to get some respect across the NBA ether, because like the playoffs have never been a big thing for him at this point in his career. But if he is like putting up good numbers, shooting good from three, blocking shots in the playoffs, and you're like, holy shit, this guy is the fucking unicorn. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's been thrown off unicorn status because of his injuries and what happened in Dallas and now then Washington. Now he's on a great team and Boston fans are like, we're nothing without Porzingis.
Well, he is a real key to that team. Let me ask you this one. If I said, what if we welcome this guy back to the spotlight? Do you want to take a guess as to who I might be talking about? A welcome back moment?
Well, Klay Thompson.
Oh, that's a good one. But no, I wasn't thinking Klay. That's a good one though.
Because, I mean, listen, are you going to be shocked if he hits eight threes in a
playoff
game?
Not even a little bit. And he's starting to get, like, the real media, like, oh, man, this guy's really over the hill. That's a really good one. I wasn't even thinking of that.
A welcome back to the spotlight. Could it be James Harden?
That's a good one. No. I was thinking that realm with Golden State, too, is Kyrie Irving. Could Kyrie Irving you know, be a 28-32 efficient scorer, secondary piece to Luka, and you know, if they make a run, that's what it would take.
And I think what's good for Kyrie is that they probably don't need 30 every night from him, right? Like, it could be that one night where Luka just can't hit a three, isn't getting the calls, and Kyrie's like, all right,
and I you got know this. He does,
and he just and he does, and he's been so good this year. It's such a good thing for him to have been so low key this year, right? Like, no drama about Kyrie. People just occasionally mentioning how good he's been this year, and then kind of move on, right? Because there's no pressure on him at the moment. There will be in the playoffs, and I think he could answer those question marks in the playoffs. I think that's a very good point. What about? I don't know. I don't. What about this? Here's a good one for you. What about Darius Garland? How do you feel about him?
I've always really liked Darius Garland. But I'm starting to temper my expectation with him a little bit more. Like, say last year, I was really big on Darius Garland. I'm like, no, he's not Donovan Mitchell, but he's, you know, not only the clear number two, but this guy's an all-star level player. And I'm tempering that expectation slightly. But I do like Darius Garland. And, you know, again, those are the types of guys that for your team to make a run, that's who it's going to take. Like, you could almost pencil in the superstars that we talked about for at least like four of the seven games in your series to really play well, some of them more consistently than others, of course. But that's the, you know, for each of these guys we're naming, they need to be the ones to step up. For the Timberwolves, it's probably Karl Anthony Towns. Those are the types of guys that need to step up for their team to make real runs.
Yeah, and I think Darius Garland is interesting just because thinking back to last year in that Knicks series, I mean, Mitchell had these games where he just couldn't hit threes, right? From game three to game five, 2 of 8, 0 for 4, 3 of 12 on his three-point shooting. Just like could not hit the three-pointers. Wasn't going well for him. And I felt as a Knicks fan, my nerves were absolutely at the highest when Darius Garland was on the court and like getting looks and getting people involved. And that felt to me like, just as a fan, you know, you know, you really feel about it. Like you said this about James Harden and Luka, when you bet against them or they're playing against your team, that's how you'll know you really feel about them. That's how I felt about Garland last year. And in their one win, he was absolutely the game changer in that game. He had 32 points, 6 of 10 from 3, 7 assists. I was scared of him in the playoffs last year, and he just couldn't quite get going. But I think there's a chance where this whole Mitchell and Garland thing with the Cavs being so good, but they've been not playing together for a lot of this year, I think that could possibly get ironed out if Garland shows up this playoff.
Yeah, and I guess the last one for me is, could the entire Miami Heat just be the secondary option again like they've done every single year, because it's come from a different place. They're so, they're incredible. I mean, the Walking Dead, that's Bill Simmons is like the zombies that he calls them. They will not die.
Yeah. Stupid. Annoying. And I think you mentioned how like the star players, you can chalk them up for like 3 or 4 wins or something like that. And then you think about like that other player, that second and third best player, like James Harden last year, man, like he won 2 games for them in that final series. And then he sucked in the other 2 games. Is that his fault? Is that Embiid's fault? Neither of them got right. But all right, Cody O'Connor, Subway Sports Talk. This has been a great episode. Appreciate you very much. As always, Cody, and we will talk to you hopefully soon again. And man, fun conversation, talking hoops, breaking it down. We'll do more hoops talk, more Knicks talk, hopefully as they get healthy. And baseball talk around the corner too. But right now, that's all we got. We will talk to you soon. Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy, Cody O'Connor. Cheers.